Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Casey Jacobowski. He is an educational research in rural schools and social studies education researcher. He's interested in leadership and improvement. He's also the author of Thinking About Teaching, which was released in February 2020. This book is a story about his reflections upon his work as an educator, how he grew, and how he hopes to get others to learn from his experiences. He also wrote about why he left public school teaching. Welcome to the podcast, Casey.
Dana, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight.
Well, I think we have a lot of interesting topics to unpack today, and I'm excited to get started. We'll start out with the question I ask everybody about a time you came out of the trenches.
That's a wonderful question. And in my book, Thinking About Teaching, I actually talk a little bit about how, as a young educator, I always wanted to be a social studies teacher, but at the five-year mark, and it was literally the five-year mark, I decided that I was struggling and I needed to take a break. And so what I did was I left teaching to go into higher education, where I was very fortunate to live with my parents while I was adjuncting and trying to find my why again. And what I wound up discovering was that I had a passion for helping others. I missed the students. I missed a little bit of the content. What I didn't miss was the overwhelming feeling of just grinding away and seeing no progress. And that hurt me to the core. It hurt me horrifically because every one of our students is a treasure and every one of our young people needs somebody to elevate them. And so I left the trenches because I needed to. And then I came back into the trenches and I left again and I went back in. And now I'm in this weird position in higher education where I'm in the trenches helping to make future teachers. And it's so exciting as a person who's so passionate about education and history and political science to talk about these areas with our future educators. And I think that this is something that our system needs to look at, is that it's often really too hard to break through what are currently impermeable boundaries, when in reality, we need people to be able to float back and forth between industries.
And I think just, you know, helping these teachers learn, you know, how to teach in today's world, right? Moving back and forth between a lot of these topics that we're going to unpack on the podcast today, I think is essential as we're training these new educators to go out into the world. Because when we started teaching, you know, some 20 years ago or so, you know, we didn't get, obviously the teacher prep program doesn't always prepare you for how it's going to be in the classroom, but the nation didn't look the same 20 years ago either. Right. So talk to me a little bit about your book, Cogging the Machine. You told me that it's in the early parts of editing. So tell me about what this book talks about and when we should expect it out.
Well, and I really appreciate that. And I'm so thankful again that EduMatch Publishers has enough faith in me to go with the second book, A Cog in the Machine. And Sarah Thomas, Dr. T, and Mandy Froelich and Melody McAllister, who are part of this amazing group, asked me to reflect on a little bit more on some of the themes that I talked about in Thinking About Teaching, which was, for a good chunk of my career, I felt like I was just a gear in the machine, and it turned, and I just was there widgeting. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to reflect on the fact that as an educator, as someone who has gone to school, as a leader, I'm an Eagle Scout, I'm very proud of that. I've always been told to do your best, to help other people at all times, to be a servant leader. And when I was within not only my teaching career, but also I went to work for the State Education Department in New York as a school improvement officer, quite often a lot of days were spent filling out paperwork, checking boxes, double checking boxes. And one of the points that got to me was the song from Wicked that Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth's characters sing about defying gravity. And I thought about it, how many of us every day when we go into work, we think, oh boy, I just need to make it through.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I just need to make it through the week.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I just need to make it through the month. Oh boy, I just need to make it through the year. When we started this process, when we started this experience, we were bright-eyed, we were enthusiastic, and the old veteran teachers in the corner of the rooms cackled, and they said, kiddo, we're gonna beat it out of you. And we're like, no. And wouldn't you know, the system beat it out of us. Not intentionally, but it was this constant grinding against this machine. But then I realized I can defy gravity. There's an old saying, a child and their parent is walking along the seashore. And they come across a whole slew of starfish on the beach. And the little girl picks up one starfish and throws it back into the ocean. And then she runs to the next one and throws that one back into the ocean. And a third, a fourth, a fifth. And after a while, her parent says to her, sweetheart, why are you doing that? You can't save them all. She turns, she looks at him, and she says, Papa, I can't save them all, but for that one starfish, that was a lot. And I think that sometimes we forget, because all of the sudden, since 2001, children became numbers. Children became check boxes. Children became esoteric, theoretical. They were no longer Billy or Bobby or Susie or Anna or Jaquan or Aisha or Muhammad or Beth. They were students first, but the system turned them into widgets. And I think as educators, and I talk about this in my book, Thinking About Teaching, and I talk about it in A Cog in the Machine, the power becomes when you as an educator wake up the next day and you go, I, for one moment today, I'm going to do something to help somebody else. And that to me, Dana, is the reason we need to do what we do on an individual basis. We can't let the system defeat us. We cannot let the system grind us like a cog in the machine. We have to become masters of our own destiny. Just like Dave Burgess and his pirate teachers say. Now, as a historian, I'll tell you, pirates are really scary. Same thing with the Vikings. Maybe we should go with cultural exchanges. But one of the big things that we really need to focus in on is we must do what is right for the children in front of us day in and day out.
And I think the pandemic has been a wake-up call to many of us educators, a lot of whom I've had on the podcast and whose books I read, about just, you know, really taking the reins, right? Like you said, making a difference, not falling for what the system has told us to do. And kind of on the vein of the book, I wanted to talk about in your book about thinking about teaching. You talk a lot about how we have to understand and model critical thinking, right? The kids have often had the curriculum handed to them, now we're seeing a lot of students who are just you know, they find a lot of material online, right? And we're in right now, late January, just had the inauguration. And so we're hoping for, you know, less of this conspiracy theories being believed and right. those type of things. But how does that, you know, relate to, let's just kind of jump to your experience at the State Department of Ed and your view on just the post-pandemic use of standards or even now at second semester in 2021 and how that relates to your views on civic literacy and authentic understanding of what is true in media versus false information.
Well, thank you for that question, Dana, because it's so critical, especially for all teachers to realize the standards said, and No Child Left Behind and the CCLS and Race to the Top and Dear Lord, Everything, said that every teacher had to be a teacher of literacy.
Yeah.
Time out. Every teacher has to be a teacher of civics because you have your classroom rules, you have your classroom practices. But more importantly, what I think we don't have is we don't have the discussion around critical thinking and citizenship. Mm-hmm. Remember, we are not turning out scientists, engineers, mathematicians in K-12. We are turning out individuals who have the knowledge, skill, and ability to go forward, to go into any career they want to. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, my HVAC mechanic, when my furnace crashed in upstate New York 2 weeks ago, when it was -3, I would have paid the dude twice what I paid him. And it's so important for us to realize that respect and civic engagement and critical thinking has been beaten out of the students in order to meet the exams.
Yeah.
And it's been beaten out of the students because what they have to do is a 5-paragraph essay with 5 sentences per paragraph. And they're taught not to disagree with an authority in front of the room. Well, I'll tell you this. I heard something that scared me. A parent posted on a social studies Facebook group recently that her child was suspended because her child said to the teacher that they were wrong because when they were talking about the transition and they said, oh yeah, you know, and now because that time President Trump was leading, you know, he had been impeached. And the girl raised her hand and said, he's been impeached twice. And the adult in the room, the teacher said, no, only once. No, not true. Impeached twice, only sitting president of the United States. Now, if you believe false narratives, and if you believe the false media, and if you believe the conspiracy theories, then you're not critically thinking. You're not looking at the world.
Yeah.
You're not taking in the work and the wisdom. And, you know, it's so scary because you look at all of the books that have been written about post-truth, 1984, you know, Animal Farm, and Edward Bellamy's Looking Backwards. I mean, things have been out for hundreds of years. All teachers need to be teachers of civics. All teachers need to be teachers of critical thinking. All teachers need to stop for a second. If the child is in your classroom objecting, or if they're pushing you, there's one of two reasons for it. Let's think back to all of our elementary psychology courses we had to take. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. One of their needs is not being met, or all of their needs are being met. And they're beginning to go, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense in my brain. And if we keep telling them no, then what we're keep going, what we will be seeing are students who have no intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
And trust me, I worked with some of the smartest people on the planet when I was at a Division I research institution for my previous job. Critical thinking, when it was numbers, when it was math, when it was a problem with defined sets, they could do it.
Yeah.
Oh, they could do calculus. But I asked them, so how are we going to sink a well to help people who are thirsty in an area where a major corporation dumped a bunch of PFOA pollutants, which is basically a pollutant that causes cancer? And they said, gee, it's a good question. And now, granted, they were all under the age of 25 and they're not expected to figure out the world's problems. But Dana, I have this little thing in the back of my head. It's the neck prick that I got this morning when I woke up because I'm in my 40s. Mm-hmm. We ain't going to be here for longer. We need that generation that's coming up to solve the problems we're leaving. And quite frankly, to quote my dad and my mom, who I love to death, they both said, oh boy, have we left you guys a steaming pile. And I keep thinking, oh, I think we left my niece and my nephew a bigger pile.
Definitely.
You know, and what we have to do is we have to talk to people and say, you need to politely challenge authority, but you have to do it in such a way where you're not tied to filling in bubbles.
Yeah.
And one of the best resources I've ever seen is the Stanford History Education Group. Mm-hmm. I love SHEG. I also love the C3 teachers because those two groups have some of the best critical thinking history out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a paid supporter. I just am shouting them out because I don't know how many times in my life I've turned to those resources as an educator and just was absolutely transformed in a practitioner role by those free, valuable resources.
Yeah, and I subscribe to the Center for Critical Thinking, which I was exposed to during my doctoral studies. You know, they have a ton of, well, some of them are paid for resources, but just, you know, being more of aware of what's going on. And we were talking about that kid who challenged a teacher, right? Because, you know, they might believe one thing. Yeah, that sounds a lot like my seventh grade son, right? That he'll watch the news with us and he'll be the one to say, hey, this is what is going on, right? So this kind of leads into, you know, as we end the school year, 2021 school year, that a lot of teachers are probably thinking about moving on. Teachers would have said, hey, I made it, you know, but they don't want to stay in the classroom and, you know, they want to find work where they can, you know, make a difference in another type of role. What do you think would be, you know, something that they should think about? Because you've changed roles several times. You've gone from being a social studies teacher to working at the Department of Ed. You know, how would you advise these teachers, especially social studies teachers?
Oh, absolutely. And Dana, first of all, we have to say that it you know, I hear the agitation in President Biden's voice about making sure teachers are safe and the fact that we are having such an issue rolling out the COVID-19 vaccines. Mm-hmm. And we do need to know that teaching is a forward facing and it's not an easy task. Mm-hmm. It's really not. the fact of the matter is that as I wrote about in my book, I have a chapter on when I left. And I was shocked when I went to a interview, well, I applied to a bank to be a manager trainee role. And the bank person said to me, you have no management skills. You have no people skills. You are a teacher. And I went, whoa, wait,
that's
time out. Have you ever been in a middle school classroom or a high school classroom? Whoa. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and I think it's part of what I've been putting a lot on Twitter is hashtag change the narrative.
Yeah.
I think what we need to do as a profession is recapture the professionalism and recapture those quote unquote soft skills that we do so well. And I hate that term because they're people-based skills. And, you know, there is a thin mint to be made out there teaching business people, teaching engineers, teaching scientists how to communicate, how to deal with people, how to mentor. You know, for me, the luck I had was and I completely recognize my power and my privilege and my opportunity because I had a social structure that allowed me to move back into my old bedroom in my parents' house when I wanted to reframe my career out of high school teaching and into college because I needed that. And then when I went to work for the state, I have to recognize the fact that it was a unique lightning in a bottle moment. I think right now educators need to remember one major thing. And if I can just, you know, steal this phrase, stop giving away your intellect. Mm-hmm. Stop giving away your intellect. I don't know how often people say things like, oh, you know, my kid's struggling in math. I know you're a teacher. Can you help? Mm-hmm. And what's our initial reaction? Of course. Well, prayers, thank yous, and the occasional gift basket do not pay the mortgage, right? So I say to you this, educators, I say to you this, people who are listening, your intellectual property should not be given away. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. You as educators need to ensure that you strive to protect your intellectual property. Mm-hmm. Stop doing things for free.
And I think that's what a lot of educators are doing this year, right?
Right.
They are spending the extra time. I mean, we're focusing a lot on Maslow before Bloom, but, you know, we're working a lot with these, whether we're in-person hybrid or a virtual, but a lot of these teachers are just, they're wanting to reach out. They're wanting to take the extra time to make sure their students are okay. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the, you know, just in the past half year, there's a lot of teachers that are getting hired at high rates to tutor as well. So, you know, I think, but, you know, as I kind of, that question I asked about those teachers who are maybe looking for other roles next school year, I think there are going to be a lot more innovators, right? And a lot mm-hmm. more, you know, as we see how things change in the next 3 to 5 years, I think there'll be places where they can land, where they are able to make a difference. Just, I've seen just since I started the podcast, you know, like you said, Dr. Sarah Thomas, who is now leading EduMatch Publishing, and a variety of people who might not be in the classroom or in a school counselor job anymore, but who are doing great things through publishing. Mandy Froelich, like you said, I had on the podcast as well, and people who are, you know, making a difference through their words and, you know, through professional development or consulting that they're doing. So tell me a little bit about some of the, when you left your job at the State Department of Education, you said that there were a lot of fellows that had no training in teaching, and you know, why that really needs to change, because there are a lot of these students who were learning how to be teachers, but they were getting the Gettysburg Address out of context and things like that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the fellows did have some training as teachers, but mm-hmm. it was a very narrow band of where they hired the fellows from, and mm-hmm. this group was brought in to, quote, make change.
Yeah.
And what happens is, this happens so often under neoliberal reform mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. neoconservative form or think tank reform.
Yeah.
Where what happens is you bring in a bunch of outsiders, pay them double and triple what your actual staff, who are just as educated or sometimes mm-hmm. more educated, say. And what they did was they created very focused work on literacy and mathematics. Mm-hmm. And one of the points that happened was, I legitimately could not stand the fact that two simultaneous points were happening. Mm-hmm. The first point was that anything a school that was in accountability was doing was wrong. There mm-hmm. was no right things going on in those schools. Mm-hmm. That to me is an anathema to servant leadership, but also strengths-based leadership as mm-hmm. well. To me, the punishment milieu that emerged mm-hmm. really scares me mm-hmm. because this idea that an educator in one of the most poverty-stricken parts of the United States was doing everything wrong, mm-hmm. when in reality, they were trying to make sure that body and soul for these children were staying together. You know, they're not going to care how to do long division if their mm-hmm. older brother is at Strong Memorial in Rochester because they were shot. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to care about what happened in 1782 to people that don't look like them if they're starving.
Yeah.
And let's just be honest with you, a lot of these school lunches are criminal. Mm-hmm. You know, carbohydrates on carbohydrates on carbohydrates. No wonder why they're falling asleep at the middle of the day. But the big thing that really annoyed me, Dana, and the part that I think broke my heart mm-hmm. was that these literacy people were telling us to take the Gettysburg Address and move it out of context to teach the speech, one of the most moving speeches, which actually, by the way, was one of the most epically debacled speeches, according to people at the time, right? Because it was short, sweet, and to the point. Lincoln wasn't even the primary speaker at the Gettysburg dedication. Another politician was. Think about that for a second. The President of the United States wasn't even the keynote. But they took the speech out of historical context. They didn't talk about the casualties. They didn't talk about the Civil War. They didn't talk about the rebellion. They didn't talk about the history of the moment and the need. Lincoln spent an enormous amount of time not only struggling with word choices, which is an accurate thing to look at. Please don't get me wrong. Historical documentation needs to be looked at for word choices. But kids need to understand the power and passion of the speech. You know, if you look at what happens and you look at the fact that when Hillary Clinton ran for president, people were going to Susan B. Anthony's gravesite in Rochester and putting the "I voted" sticker on her gravesite.
Yeah, I remember seeing a video about that.
Or you saw the three most powerful first ladies and second gentlemen of the United States wearing purple. The symbolism of the color of the suffragettes. We don't know this and we don't communicate it because what's going to happen? TMZ, they're going to talk about, ooh, Kashmir, woo, or ooh, look at that cut, woo. But the thing is we don't have the symbolism. We don't have the group conversation like we used to. Yeah. There is no more cutting out TV to show the attempt to get a rocket to the moon. We don't have people breaking coverage to talk about big issues. There's too much information out there. There's too many different streams. And one of the points that didn't happen was there was no conversation around critical literacy and consumption of knowledge. And that to me is a huge sin professionally, is that we don't talk about those things. And we are continuously battling with each other about what it means to be literate.
And I think that's a good segue into you know, the use of the events of January 6th, right? And how some school districts, you know, they were told the teachers not to discuss the events, right? And, you know, and a lot of that is just, you know, the students knew what happened. I mean, as you said, we see the live TV stream. And we've gotten to a point in American history where we can't ignore what's happening as teachers. You know, I in the 16 election, you know, I still had to be in a place where, you know, Miss, who did you vote for? And I couldn't talk about anything, right? And I think at this point, like, you might not want to, like, throw your views on students, but just discuss what the context and why that's happening and have that open discussion, you know, with, you know, Black Lives Matter, with everything that's happened in 2020 and early 21, I think any educator is leaving students out, right? If they're, you know, not tackling the current issues, right? Because that's part of refuting this bad knowledge. Like you said, that's part of refuting some of this, these conspiracy theories that are going around, because kids, they are critical thinkers, but, you know, they're like sponges. If they hear false information, they'll latch onto that.
Yeah. And it's true because, you know, unfortunately, children are parrots in a lot of ways. They hear what their parents say. They've never been able to really think critically about why their parents may have inaccurate viewpoints, or grandparents or uncles or aunts. And this is probably why psychotherapists make a thin mint. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the points that we really cognitively need to stare right in the face is that teachers were fired for being women. Teachers were fired for being Catholics. Teachers were fired for getting married. Teachers were fired for being pregnant. Kate Rousemarie does a great job. She's a professor at university in Ohio, of talking about the disabling nature of history on teachers. And this idea of, and this has been all over the place with reformers going back to Socrates, right? They put him to death for teaching the youth of Athens to critically think. Teachers have been put in a situation where our public and our private lives are no longer bifurcated.
Yeah.
It has become in our world an idea that your public and your private persona must be the same.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, what we have is we have such egregiously frightened people in management roles and in controlling roles who do not want to offend anybody, who do not want to create controversy, who do not want to put off people because of their fear of the backlash. And so one of the points that I think is really, truly, powerfully needed to be talked about is that while educators historically have done damning things and really, really, really created in many ways issues and problems by how they've treated people who don't look like them or children of poverty, right? One thing happened, and Campbell Scribner wrote about it in his book, The Fight for Local Control, is that there's a group of people who have been actively working to silence teachers because they believe that their unions have too much power. And Kathy Kramer also has written extensively about this in especially rural areas and suburban areas where the idea of teacher activism is bad. And the idea of teachers talking about the fact that you can have your beliefs, but facts are facts.
Yeah.
And fact of the matter is 400,000 people have died from COVID-19. That's a fact. The United States Capitol had people who violently attacked its halls. And if not for the swift thinking of a few Capitol police officers, we could have had a tragedy.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them was honored at the cap at the inauguration. And I really wish I could remember the gentleman's name. A true hero, right? He and the others who stood in the way of the folks who were rioting made a huge difference. And you know, Jennifer Binnis, who is on Twitter, and I follow her, does such an amazing job of taking paired texts. And she had a picture of the Black Lives Matter protest at the Lincoln Memorial and the police presence during January 6, 2021.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And my God, if that does not make you think, wow, something's wrong. You know, and again, it goes back to the fact that in Texas, parents did not want pictures of civil rights demonstrators being hosed and attacked by dogs and beaten in the textbooks because they didn't want their children exposed to what they said was violence. Now, I know the Motion Picture Association of America rates films and TV. But don't get me wrong. How many parents who didn't want this picture of civil rights protesters being attacked by dogs or hoses were actually not afraid to expose their child to violence by having them watch hockey, football, how to...
Or any violent movie, right?
Yeah, or, you know, some, I mean, half the movies out there, really, the kids should not be watching them, right? You know, and I think one of the biggest issues is that what we perceive as adults,
yeah,
and what children perceive is so different. Children need to understand in a scaffolding way what adulthood means.
Yeah.
And this idea of a post-World War II lilied, gilded, nice childhood,
yeah,
is a fantasy. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, my dad grew up on a farm. He knew where babies came from because the horses were dropping foals. You know, and he'd get yelled at by my grandfather and my great grandparents, God rest their souls, to help birth a chicken, mm-hmm, egg, because they needed to do that, or to take care of something with sheep, or, you know, I mean, some of the stories they tell, especially, yeah, my uncle. Wow, my uncle. Oh, Uncle Tom needs help. Yeah. But it's all these different areas where, you know, we want to protect kids. Yeah. And then at the magic age of 18, we flip a button and we release them. And they go out there and they're like, what do I do?
Yeah,
and
it's
like,
yeah.
Got to adult now. And oh, by the way, you're responsible. And they're like, yeek.
Yeah. You talked a little bit in the pre-chat about refutational texts and, yeah, the fact that, like, if people are reading false information about climate change, for example, that sometimes it takes 60 months for a myth to get people to believe those myths. But I think in, you know, some other type of, you know, false news that's going around, it probably takes a lot less than 60 months. It kind of just depends on the subject area. You, yeah, talked a lot about it's tied to identity and urban versus rural split.
Yeah, exactly. So I am in huge debtedness to Professor Aguilar, mm-hmm, and the American Education Research Association's Educational Research Journal, mm-hmm, that talked about refutational texts. And I think this brings up a bigger issue, is that as practitioners, we often don't get a chance to talk to the researchers, and the researchers don't talk to us, mm-hmm, vice versa. And, you know, when I was a young punk, I never really understood why it was important for these researchers to be doing this, because that was, mm-hmm, all about practitionering. But one of the points that I want to bring up is that Aguilar's research is profoundly important, because it takes so long and it takes so much work. It is essentially like deprogramming somebody who's been brainwashed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's communications professors at the University of Delaware. I cannot for the life of me remember her name. I think it's Dr. Young, mm-hmm, who was on NPR not that long ago. She talked about the fact that it's this vitriol that we're spitting at each other that's causing us to be further and further and further ensconced in our camps.
Yeah.
And one of the areas that I think emerges from this is this concept of identity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, oh boy, one group's very educated, the other's not. Well, mm-hmm, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with identity. And it goes back to, again, Kathy Kramer's work and John Cervone's work, mm-hmm, and Amy Howley's work and Craig and his wife's work, as well as Mara Tekken's work, and all these amazing scholars, and I'm going to forget a couple of them, like Kat Bidwell and Aaron McHenry Sorber and Kai, mm-hmm, Schaft, who have looked at rural versus suburban, because, mm-hmm, it's not really urban per se.
Okay.
I think we've got to get an understanding here is that there's a bifurcation going on between rural and urban, when in reality it's rural versus suburban.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Tribalism as a concept emerged in anthropology ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same idea why people wear different colors. And we're talking about how my Buffalo Bills were playing today against the Kansas City Chiefs, mm-hmm, and you have blue versus red, or you have the Green Bay Packers who wear green, and you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wearing gold, mm-hmm, or orange. You know, and it's this idea that we associate with our identity of who we are and where we're from. And it's this idea of saying, well, people are being abusive towards me because of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a way for people to put a driving wedge between us.
Yeah.
And so one of the points that I've learned as I've gone through history is that as a Polish and an Irish American, one of the first things the capitalists did in Buffalo was they set the Polish and the Irish off against the Germans. They set them off against the Blacks, against the Latinos, against the African-Americans, against all number of people. Why? Because the fact of the matter is if you drive people who have more in common apart, then you get to maintain your power.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that's happening is that the Republican Party allowed, as have the Democrats too, so both parties are at fault, they've allowed narratives of identity to assume superior positioning to community. And so here's my point. My neighbors have Trump signs. Whoa. I did not personally like Joe Biden, but at this point in time, it was an ABT. Right. One of the issues that emerged, and I just killed half your audience, sorry. One of the problems that emerged was as a person who believes in community support and community health and community development, right? I would not intentionally say, I'm sorry, you have to go hungry or you can't get medical care. Well, I get it. I also would not say to my neighbor who had a Trump sign up, when her little dog wandered into my arm or into my yard, well, I'm going to do something nasty to your dog. No, I picked up the puppy dog. It licked me a couple of times. I petted the dog. I said, who's a good doggy? And I took it back and I knocked on the door and I said, here's your dog, right? But that's the problem, is that there are some people out there who would legitimately smack the dog. And you think, why would you do that? Why? Why would you get onto the TV screen and scream at people that they're going to kill unborn children or they're going to invade, or, you know, it's this issue where refutational texts also have to be balanced by the fact that you can't incite violence. And far too long, we've had people inciting violence. You know, somebody today wrote on Twitter that they were upset about the billionaires and they wanted to just take all their money. I would call on folks like Jeff Bezos to say, you know what? I'm going to go on Undercover Billionaire and I'm going to make sure no food bank in the United States runs out of food.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be a billionaire, but what the hell? We've lost this idea, Dana, and it's very clear that we've lost it. And we've lost it hard in the United States of, we have to work together. The only way we could ever succeed was working together. And if you look at Jamestown and you look at how many people died, it was almost three quarters of the colonists. They needed the Native Americans to help them. They needed to help each other. This mythos that we can do it on our own is a myth. And it's a hurtful myth, you know? And I want people to understand. I know that people are scared. This is a scary time. But intentionally going out and saying, you don't deserve to have this because I don't have this, it's the wrong sentence. You should be saying, you have this, help me get it too.
Yeah, I think that's so important today as, you know, we look at just inequities and, you know, one thing that's big in the news just this past week is the, you know, botched vaccine rollout. And, you know, I'm sure at some point people were just going to get mad at who has the vaccine versus who hasn't been able to get it, right? So, I mean, there's going to be stuff. And I think I think hopefully come more together as a nation and realize that we have a lot more in common than we think, that people will become more resilient to, you know, just the few outliers that may be, you know, have their opinion. But I think those outliers of voice have been, you know, dominating the news recently.
And Dana, I think honestly, it comes from one point, and it comes from ignorance, and it comes from not ignorance of stupidity, but it comes from ignorance of not knowing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because I have the pleasure of understanding and knowing people who have gone around the world and have connections with people in other nations. Americans are very good at traveling internally to the United States, but not so good about traveling externally.
Yeah.
We don't really get to see things. I mean, you know, if you think about it, right? So there are a lot of people on the southern border who go back and forth to Mexico for resorts, but they go to a resort. They don't actually go to sea, you know? And the other area is that Canada is really, especially on the eastern part of it, is an outpost of Europe on this continent. And going into Toronto or going into Ottawa or going into Montreal especially, you really get the sense when things are different, you know? And my sister-in-law experienced it when she was with her Italian-born husband and they were on their honeymoon, and she got profoundly burned at the beach, and it was bad. And she also happened to have gotten stung by a bee and was having an allergic reaction at the same time. So not only is she sunburned, but she's also allergic to bees. Happy honeymoon. She goes to a hospital expecting to pay a $150 copay.
Yeah.
And they take care of her. And they don't let her, and they don't let her go for 2 days because they wanted to make sure she was okay. And see, that I think is an issue that we look at that and we go, well, how in the heck did they do that?
Yeah.
You know, and the question is not, well, I don't have it, you shouldn't. Well, how do we get that? How do we work together to get that?
Yeah. Yeah, one of the movies I like that talks a lot about those things is Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's movie, right? What was that? Probably three, four years old. Yeah. So,
but I even think a movie like Batteries Not Included or another movie like WALL-E, great example.
Yeah, you know,
I think Trolls is another good example. You know, and one of the other areas that I think, and I'm so glad you brought this up about media and the role of educators in media and this idea of reputational texts, is that what we've got to do is look at the relevancy of what we're doing in the classroom.
Yeah.
We've created such a dry curriculum, you know, and now children at the age of four are asking, playing. Children at the age of 14 can't wait to go home.
Yeah.
That's scary. Instead of kids going, I can't wait to go home, they should be going, I can't wait to experiment and show mom and dad what I did, or uncle or auntie or grandma and grandpa or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what needs to shift as we move into the post-pandemic education. I think there's been a lot of eye-opening happening in the last year, and just what kids, what kind of curriculum should be used, and what, you know, kind of discussions need to be had in classes. Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
I think it's really important to understand this concept of civics. And I think I want people to be kind to each other. I want people to think about how we're not perfect as a nation.
Yeah.
We are not set in our ways. We can grow, we can improve, we can learn. I think it's time for all of us to look at what two very critically important presidents said about that. The first one was Democratic John F. Kennedy, who created Peace Corps and AmeriCorps. And the second one was George Bush, who created the Thousand Points of Light Foundation. I'm a very proud Eagle Scout. I'm friends with very proud Girl Scouts. We need the concept of service and servant leadership back in the forefront. I want people to take time intentionally to help other people at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And I want teachers to fall back on this point. You are helping.
Yeah.
But sometimes helping begins at home. Yeah. Assign less homework. Check in with your students more often.
Mm-hmm.
When kids that I had who are now adults of their own and have children, and they reach out to me on Facebook, you know what they say? Not the history I taught them.
Yeah.
Not the assignments I gave them. Not the clubs I advised them. But Dana, they say, thank you for caring about us. And thank you for doing what you did by buying food for us when we forgot our lunch money, or bringing in bagels and cream cheese for us on test morning, or allowing us to just cry in your classroom, mm-hmm. and then going, I know it sucks, mm-hmm. but you're going to stand up and you're going to do great.
Yeah.
And being there, because every single one of us, every single one of us has the power to take a student who is going to jump off a cliff and instead teach them how to climb a mountain.
I think that's really great to end with, because we know what impact we have on kids and, you know, what those relationships we build with them, like you said, years later in the classroom, that's what they remember. They remember the food, the hugs, the listening ear, the caring teacher. Well, where can people connect? Oh, go ahead.
And it's always a consensual side hug.
Yeah. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online? Yeah.
Well, I am at KCJ_EDU on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I also have a Facebook page, KCJ Thinking About Teaching. And I have a blog that I'm not very good at blogging about because, quite frankly, I'm just tired.
Yeah.
But if you look for me, I'm on both WordPress and Weebly. If you just Google my name, KCJ Jacobowski, and always go to Edge of Match. That's mm-hmm. where I am as an author. And I appreciate you, Dana, so much for having me on. I think that the joy and privilege is that if you think the professional development in your home district is not phenomenal, mm-hmm. hop on Twitter. Mm-hmm. The community is by and far one of the best professional learning networks I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly wish that we could give teachers credit for engaging in tweet chats.
Yeah.
Because I learned so much. I really do.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's resonated across many guests I've had and myself, you know, having been on Twitter for, you know, maybe 3 years now, but, you know, there's so much to be said for what you learn through other educators that way. So, well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. It was a real pleasure to talk with you today and hear about, things that you've experienced in your career and, you know, some of your, you know, highlights of, you know, what you've learned. And yeah, you guys can find Thinking About Teaching on Amazon. Yep. And your next book, when was that expected to be out? I don't think you mentioned.
A Cog in a Machine is currently with the editor at the moment. Mm-hmm. We are hoping for sometime either late spring or early summer.
Okay.
Depending upon how quickly things go.
Okay.
And please, 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 please remember you can help move a kid from a cliff to a mountain.
Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks.